I have a question for you this morning. I'm wondering if there is anyone kind of like me who might have a bit of a nervous, maybe anxious go-to that you like to do, an activity that you like to do when you are a little anxious or maybe even angry. Well, mine involves a vacuum cleaner. You know, so like I like to get behind the vacuum sweeper and feel like I am in control of the dirt that is in my house. And my vacuum sweeper has a clear canister, so I can see all the stuff that it's picking up, you know. And this is somehow incredibly satisfying to think that I can get this vacuum sweeper and I can get everything under control. Yeah, thank you. So, you know, but the problem with that is that only lasts for so long. And you can only clean so much and feel in control of anything. And then the world kind of hits you and you realize, didn't really have it after all. So I was consulting the biblical text. And as I was looking at the text for this week, Paul has some words that we would like to focus on. It's coming from his letter to the Romans. And it reads, Romans, the 12th chapter, 9th through 21st verse. Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with mutual affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not lag in zeal, be ardent in spirit, and serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope, be patient in suffering. Persevere in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints, extend hospitality to strangers. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who weep and weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another and do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Do not claim to be wiser than you are. Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. If it is possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave room for the wrath of God, for it is written, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay," says the Lord. No, if your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. For by doing this, you will heap burning coals on their heads. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Overcome evil with good. You know, so when I find in this text is that my anxiousness is met with Paul's confidence, that my aimless busyness is met with Paul's purposeful action, and that my sketchy doubt and even my shaky fear, they run smack into Paul's faith. But you know, when we read this, sometimes our internal voice kicks in and we begin to kind of have a conversation with the text. And it might go a little bit like this for you. It might go like, you know, come on, Paul. You make it sound so simple, almost prescriptive. Rejoice in hope, be patient in suffering. What, seriously? Well, maybe Paul didn't catch the news this week. But you see, I couldn't help it, because my cell phone was giving me alerts like every few hours of something that was going on in the world. And when I looked at any of my electronic devices, these alerts kept popping up. And, you know, I was hearing things about everywhere from Charlottesville to Houston to Baton Rouge to Washington, D.C., to even as remote as Sierra Leone. And that doesn't even begin to touch on the stuff that's happening closer to home. So my internal voice wants to say, and you, Paul, you don't even begin to sound flustered. But you know, if I keep reading the biblical text and I go a little bit beyond this passage where we were locating ourselves today, then I find that Paul really does know a few things about trouble. You see, Paul isn't always the apostolic giant of my imagination. He isn't always the church planter extraordinaire, the author of so much of what we read in the New Testament. You see, even by Paul's own account in 2 Corinthians, we learn that Paul has really been through quite a bit. Paul says, and I quote, 5 times I have received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I received a stoning. 3 times I was shipwrecked for a night and a day. I was adrift at sea on frequent journeys in danger from rivers, danger from bandits, danger from my own people, danger from the Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brothers and sisters, in toil and in hardship, through many a sleepless night. I went without food. I was often without food, cold and naked, and besides all these things, I am under daily pressure because of my anxiety for the churches. So my internal voice kicks in and I go, oh, so sorry, Paul. I don't know how you manage to stay so calm, so loving, so forgiving in your letter to the Romans when I read what you wrote in 2 Corinthians. You see, Paul is trying to remind us today that the presence of trouble does not mean the absence of God. Indeed, a trip through the Psalms will let us know that trouble often lands even on the biblical doorstep. And the psalmist knows where to go when trouble comes sweeping in. You see, the psalmist knew not to go to his friend group. The psalmist knew not to take up this issue on social media. But the psalmist ran to God. The psalmist says, I cry out to God Most High, to God who vindicates me. So you see, if somebody has told you that being a Christian means that God is going to keep you from trouble and keep you apart from anxiety, well, I'm here to bust that myth today. Because God is not a refuge from trouble. God is a refuge in trouble. So when your alerts go off in your pocket or your purse, then remember the promise that God is with you and ever-present help in a time of trouble. A psalmist writes, "For in the day of trouble, he will keep me safe in his dwelling. He will hide me in the shelter of his sacred tent, and he will set me high upon a rock." You see, even our collective memory in this room will attest to the uncertainties and the vicissitudes of life. But my friends, If we are only focused on what we see that is right in front of us, well, then our spiritual vision will be distorted because we will be unable to see that this same God is the God who was with us before, who was back there before. This same God is present with us today, and this same God holds in God's hands a future that might appear uncertain to us. So today, I would like to issue three challenges, and the first of which is to remember God's goodness. Now you see, this is not a memory that originates in your mind. But this is a memory that originates in your spirit, a memory that originates in your soul. It is one that allows you to feel something, to see something from a time before, an experience with God in the past. And you see, there was a writer who once said, "My soul looks back in wonder. My soul looks back in wonder at how I got over and to see the salvation of the Lord." You see, then when my soul remembers the Lord, then I am free to reflect that to others. And so my second challenge for you this morning is to reflect Christ's love. I don't know what you might be going through today, but I'm challenging you to reflect Christ's love. You see, the text that we read just a moment ago provides for us a practical application, not only to live, but to share Christ's love on earth. For we are often reminded that love is an action verb. It is not simply something that you feel. It is not simply something that you say, but love is something that you do. Now, while love might be routinely preached, you see, the real litmus test of love is whether or not it is genuine, or is it hypocritical? Is it acting out of self-interest, or does it put others' well-being first? You see, we might be aware of the trouble that lies before us. I know I am aware that uncertainties are always our traveling companions. And yet, let us consider the goodness of His love that never fails. For my help, it comes from the Lord, the Maker of heaven and earth. And indeed, it is in adversity that we get the chance to prove the faith that we sing. We get the chance to prove the faith that we claim. We get the opportunity. It's a privilege to have this opportunity to live out this love, this peace, this joy. It's a privilege to prove this faith that we've claimed in this room. You see, love doesn't argue its point. Love doesn't need to be first. Love just shows up, and it transforms the room by itself. This last week, while I was at a ministry connection, Dan Kagi shared the story of a recent missions trip that he was on. And he told about working for the entire week with a group of people, some of which were very, very different in their faith construct than Dan's. But at the end of the trip, they gathered for prayer, and Dan recognized that standing next to him was a Muslim, that standing next to him were some Roman Catholics, and only one other person from Glenmar, from his faith tradition. But they all begin to pray. And Dan was so moved as he told this story, because at that time, at that moment, something happened. It wasn't about the tasks that they were performing together. It wasn't about their understanding of who God is, but somehow God's Spirit came into that space in a very mysterious way, and they were bound together in mission. You see, something happens when we can move task into the realm of transformation. There's a difference, actually, between task and transformation. Where transformation will always involve task, it will always involve us doing something. Task, in and of itself, does not produce change. You see, only the power of God's Spirit has the ability to transform. With God's Spirit that is promised you, with God's Spirit that is living in you, you have the power to redefine the circumstances that you face. And so my third challenge for you on today is to redefine the circumstance. Redefine your circumstance. On April the 16th in 1963, following a Good Friday demonstration, a prominent pastor and civil rights activist was imprisoned in a Birmingham, Alabama jail. Now, this was the 13th arrest and confinement for Martin Luther King Jr. And at the outset, this time, it looked a little bit different than the others, and it didn't look good at all. Because by this point, there was so much hatred, so much anger, so much vitriol that was at place, that when Martin was placed in solitary confinement, he was not allowed initially to consult with his attorneys. He was not allowed to communicate with his wife. That is, until President John F. Kennedy was sought to intervene. But you see, the next 4 days, from April the 16th until April the 20th, while Dr. King sat in solitary confinement in that jail, he began to do what he could do. He began to write. And Barbara Maranzani states that without writing papers even, King initially began by jotting down some notes in the margin of the newspaper itself. And then eventually, those notes were compiled, and what grew out of that was a 21-page, double-spaced, typed, systematic position on resistance to nonviolence. You see, in this letter, King defended his strategy for nonviolent resistance, and in this letter, he began to redefine not only his circumstance, but those for the cause of whom he was fighting. And today, this letter is part of many American school curriculums. It has been translated into over 40 different languages, and it is existing in over 50 published texts. So I am challenging us today to take the circumstance that we have been handed and to begin to look at it differently. You see, the hardship that we often define as trouble can become a catalyst for change. And where can we get this idea in biblical text? It's everywhere. How about Moses? Moses was a catalyst for change. How about Esther? She was a catalyst for change. How about David? How about Samson? How about even Paul that we read about today? You see, confined to a prison, each one of the writers to whom I have referred has used the power of the pen to advance their cause. They became a catalyst for change. Now, New Testament scholar Mark Allen Powell says that to fully appreciate how remarkable this man Paul is, we should approach his writings in the light of two sobering thoughts. First, we are reading the words of a martyr. He cared so deeply about what he had to say that he was willing to endure humiliation, physical torment, and ultimately death in order to say it. And secondly, we are reading the works of a convert, at least in some sense of the word. Because before he became a follower of Jesus, Paul actually tried to destroy the Christian church by employing violence against those who confessed the very faith for which he himself would later suffer violence. You see, something happened. Something happened that transformed Paul from an infamous enemy of that faith to its most prominent promoter and spokesperson. And from a man who was willing to kill for his convictions to a man who was willing to die for them. Paul was able to remain in a place of trust. He was able to rest in a place of trust and surrender, regardless of his circumstances. Why? Because Paul's heart had been changed. Paul's own life had been redefined. Paul's career trajectory had been altered. And Paul had been radically transformed by an encounter with Jesus. And that encounter, that made all the difference. So a question for us today is, are we willing to trust God for the outcome? Will you be willing to live in a faithful obedience, committing your entire life and your entire trust to God's grace? Or will you attempt to manipulate the situation on your own? You see, I am suggesting that we make a choice today, right now, in this very moment, to leave behind our anxiety-ridden busyness, our pointless hyper-posting activity, and to choose instead to have confidence in the Lord, in the resurrection power of Jesus Christ. For the biblical text tells us yet of another story of great difficulty and great trouble. You see, there was a time when there was tremendous political upheaval. There was a time when there was tremendous persecution, and it was into that very state that God chose to send God's own son. But God's son was not received in that time. And so he suffered beating, he suffered ridicule, he ultimately went to the cross where he gave his life. And then his lifeless body was taken and was buried in a borrowed tomb. But that, my friends, is not the end of the story. Because on the third day, he rose again. On the third day, Jesus rose again. And this same spirit that was in Jesus is now in the church. It's available to you. It's available to me. You see, in Jesus' words, he said, "In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, for I have overcome the world." And you see, we in this room, we have the power to overcome. We do overcome by the one who overcame. So overcome evil with goodness. Overcome evil with the goodness of the one who overcame. We overcome, my friends, the evil, the doubt, the insecurity, the anxiety, even the persecution, we overcome by the goodness of the one who overcame. So while anxiety can often seem overwhelming, God has given us the power to overcome, and that power is manifested in action. It is manifested in the actions that reflect the goodness of Jesus Christ. I don't know what you might be going through today, but I invite you in this moment into prayer. Loving Lord, we come before you in this moment. We come before you just as we are, fallible, oftentimes anxiety-ridden. Oftentimes, God, we don't know where to turn. And yet, Lord, you have said that you would be with us, that you would never leave us, that you would never forsake us, and that you would always call us your own. So God, on today, would you look into this room and would you minister to the needs of these your people? We commit our lives, we commit our tasks, we commit ourselves to you fresh in this moment. Have your way, Lord, and may it always honor you and your Son, Christ. Amen.